Hello, welcome to Powerhouse Politics. I'm ABC News Chief White House Correspondent Jonathan Carl.
And I'm ABC News Political Director Rick Klein.
We've got a big show today. We're going to be talking to Virginia Governor Terry McAuliffe in just a couple of minutes. And Rick, this is the first podcast since the downfall of the Republican health care plan in the House.
So is this called the Rick is Right podcast? Is that the actual title of this podcast? Or is there some variation of that we're going with? I wasn't
well,
exactly
clear. Well, we did discuss the prospects of that bill passing the House on Thursday during our last podcast. As a matter of fact, our acting executive producer, Michelle Boncato, I think has a little clip from that podcast. Michelle, can you please play that clip?
I think they can pass it.
Can you please play that again? This is just to give context. This is Rick Klein talking about the prospects of the American Health Care Act. What's it called again? Is that what AHCA stands for? The Republican bill passing the House. This is what Rick said last week, shortly before the bill was pulled. Play it again, please.
I think they can pass it.
One more time, please.
I think they can pass it.
So Rick, do you want to acknowledge that you were wrong about the Republican prospects?
No,
I was
exactly right. I think
Did they pass it?
That was a statement of fact as of Thursday afternoon. New developments happened where they were unable to pass it. I was right in saying, look, it's like when Spicer says the president does believe that. I did think that at the time. That's exactly what I thought, that they could pass it.
So you were,
and then they couldn't. It's very simple. I think what's important here is the big picture, John, and that is that they never had the votes. They didn't start with the votes. They didn't finish with the votes. And at no point in any of this did they have the votes. And to me, it just – the mystique of the presidency, to say nothing of prediction games, the mystique of the presidency fades away with this, because there was a sense on Capitol Hill that Donald Trump's the closer. He can get this done. He wasn't able to. And the White House perspective, Paul Ryan can get this done because you don't lose votes in the House. He wasn't able to. So now a president that came in with the promise of being both feared and loved is neither of those things and gets that big setback and the agenda off the rails.
So what does it mean for that merry band of true believing conservatives in the House, the Freedom Caucus? I mean, they were able to stop the president's agenda cold. They were wooed by the president. They were invited to the White House over and over again. They gave him a standing ovation on Thursday there in the cabinet room.
They even went bowling.
They went bowling with the legislative affairs team. So what does it say about them? What next for them?
Well, I thought the most interesting thing in the aftermath of this defeat was when President Trump said we learned a lot about loyalty. And you've seen the tweets that have come out since then. And boy, these guys have no friends on Capitol Hill in the Republican leadership, the establishment Republicans, the folks on the Paul Ryan team.
And they didn't before.
They didn't before, but now, you know, to get handed this embarrassing defeat. And I'm curious to see, does Donald Trump get led to that altar again, or does he stick the knife in? Because he now knows that there's a couple dozen Republicans that he can't count on. And it's a little bit different. It'd be one thing if he was defied just by moderates, because you can threaten them with challengers. You're not going to beat these guys from the right, but you can show them the cold shoulder, and you can cut them out of things. And if you're looking for governing coalitions, you could make them irrelevant. And boy, are they going to hate that. But I feel like they feel chastened by this.
You mean working with Democrats
where the votes are. I mean, that's really the only alternative. And in some ways, President Trump is uniquely situated to do this. You've made this point on Good Morning America the other day, that there's a chance for him to go very big on this and to be the really nonpartisan person that he promised to be. But it's really hard, because that's not who he surrounded himself with in the White House. That's not the policy inclinations he brought on the campaign trail. And it is certainly not going to be in Democrats' political interest to be empowering Donald Trump, something I know we're going to talk to Governor McAuliffe about in a few minutes.
You know, there are some of these Freedom Caucus members that are from – they're all from districts where Trump is exceedingly popular.
Very popular.
Most of them. And one name that I've heard mentioned is this Alex Mooney, congressman from the 2nd District in West Virginia. Coal country. Mm-hmm. I mean, if there's one area where Trump is
– Trump country.
I mean,
sure.
You know, I mean, he went
wildly
there.
Wildly popular.
He put the hard hat on. He promised that he would, you know, fight for coal jobs. He's already taken action on it in his first 100 days. You know, what if they went after a guy like Mooney and said, look, we're going to support somebody else?
Well, that's a really intriguing question, to see how the Trump political operation adjusts. They've already – the Freedom Caucus lost a member Ted Poe left the Freedom Caucus entirely over this. And even Mark Meadows, who is the face of the Tea Party as the chairman of the caucus, he was on with our colleague George Stephanopoulos over the weekend and basically sounding a lot less like a purist when it comes to tax reform. That he may be able to cut a deal that even if it means adding to the deficit, which would be a crazy betrayal under any other president. So I wonder how chastened they are, and I wonder what Donald Trump's next legislative move is. In the meantime, he's doing a lot with the so-called pen and phone again, right? The executive orders, the big EPA regulations, the immigration enforcement and cracking down on sanctuary cities. You're seeing what we're focused a lot on what they can't do in the White House. There's a lot that they can do.
I think Ford's doing something in Michigan.
Getting some jobs together in Ford, right? The coal stuff. There's a lot going on out of this White House. But the next legislative move, John, it's not like there's easy paths ahead. It's not like there's a whole bunch of things they can start checking off.
Well, the first thing that I started hearing after the bill went down or got pulled was from Republican leadership both sides of Pennsylvania Avenue, worry that, you know, forget about tax reform. We've got government funding runs out on April 28th. So we have this continuing resolution that has basically been funding the government past, before the election. That runs out on April 28th. I hear real concerns about whether or not that can pass. And their plan, by the way, was to do kind of a double whammy here, was to fund the government through the end of the fiscal year, October 1st, but also to kind of slide in there a debt ceiling increase. So they wouldn't have to fight that fight in the fall. I mean, you're not going to get these Freedom Caucus guys on board unless there's a sudden kind of, you know, we were wrong, which I don't sense. I mean, can we see a shutdown? Can we see a shutdown showdown going right in? And obviously, are Democrats at this point,
they're
eager
gonna bail
at all?
Out Donald Trump. They're going to bail out the president who's not talking to them on anything. You have to focus on not just the words from this president, as always, but also the actions. And he has said occasionally some throwaway comments here and there. I'm going to work with Chuck on this. I'm going to let's get some Democrats to the table. He blamed Pelosi and
the problem is now you're doing it from a point of weakness.
Well, that's the thing.
Maybe he had a chance in the beginning, but now
this was January, right?
Yeah. Now you're coming in saying, look, I couldn't do it with Republicans, so now I need you guys.
This is a real problem for this White House and how they strategize on this and how they come forward. That defines their success. I think a lot of the apocalyptic predictions of the end of the legislative agenda, that's overstated as always. They still have control of the House and the Senate.
Bill Clinton's biggest successes came after his loss in 94.
And that's it. That, to me, is the key. If this president accepts the fact that he doesn't have a governing majority in the House or the Senate, really, and starts to govern as if he has a minority in Congress— that's how you get big things done, or even small things that add up to big things.
And it doesn't necessarily mean you have to work with Nancy Pelosi
no,
and Chuck
no,
Schumer.
No, that's not going to happen. Exactly.
But you can, there are still moderate Democrats. There are still moderate Republicans. They're kind of hard to find, but they're there.
And there's some policy-oriented ones who say, you know what, I hate everything else, but on this one little piece of this, that's where I believe in, and I can get this done for my state or my district.
Okay, well, let's go to the person that knows about all of this. Joining us now, Virginia Governor Terry McAuliffe, former chairman of the Democratic National Committee. So many former things,
lots
really.
Of,
I
lots
mean,
of, it's lots like, of formers, but not the former governor yet. He's still got a couple months left.
No.
So, Governor, we want to talk about what the impact of this Republican healthcare implosion and what it means for Virginia and what you're doing with Medicaid. But I want to start with a much bigger picture here.
Sure.
Since the Republicans failed to get through a Republican Congress their Obamacare alternative, there's talk of, well, if President Trump wants to get anything done, he needs to work with Democrats. He's going to have to work with Democrats. We heard that from Reince Priebus, chief of staff, on Sunday, from others in the White House and on the Hill. So my question to you is, how plausible is that really? Don't Democrats on Capitol Hill at this point look at the White House in horror, smell a little bit of blood, and the idea that they would come in and bail out his agenda? Is there really any possibility that could happen?
None. I would say it's bigger than that. I think the main issue is you are never going to get the Democrats to work with Donald Trump and the Republicans to get rid of Obamacare. So if you're going to try and bring Democrats over, which I would have argued he should have tried to do, because I think we all in agreement The bill needs to be tweaked, improved. We're all in agreement on that. We need to do things about the cost of pharmaceuticals. But in order to do that, that means Democrats are working with the president to ensure that Obamacare is here forever. And I just think for the Republicans in the Congress who have been barking about this now for, you know, 10 years, 9 years, that I don't see it very likely that that's going to happen. Chuck Schumer, Nancy Pelosi, willing to work with the president to improve it, to make it better, to bring down the cost of drug prices. If the president wants to do that and he thinks he can get his Republican in Congress to work with him on that, that's one thing. But let's be clear, there is zero chance that one Democrat will work with this administration if it's going to do anything to undermine or eliminate Obamacare. It's just not going to happen.
But let's look even broader than that. I mean, the idea that the White House needs to have some kind of a reset, that President Trump is somebody who came in. I remember one of his top people right after the election said, we just elected, America just elected our first independent president. He's not a guy who has particular loyalty to the Republican Party. He's not even particularly conservative if you look over the course of his life. He spent most of it as a Democrat. Is there any scenario in which he could make some kind of a pivot, become a transformational president, work with Democrats on things like, you know, closing tax loopholes, infrastructure? Is there?
There are areas where we could work together. Infrastructure, clearly one of those, because at the end of the day, governors, we're the ones who build all the roads. So, you know, in Virginia, we lead the nation on our public-private partnerships. If he wants to work with us on issues like that, we're willing to work with them. I think tax reform is even going to be thornier than the health care reform and the repeal of the Obamacare they tried to do. That is fraught with problems for the president. He can't increase the debt. We're not going to let him give these tax cuts to the rich and hurt middle-class America. We're just not going to do it. So everyone's open and working. I've said day one since the president came in, if you want to work with us on infrastructure, if you want to work with us on health care, they never did. And in fact, you know, I chair the National Governors Association, you know, where they would work with Republican governors. There was not one outreach to Democratic governors to say, do you want to work with us? We have to implement all these Medicaid policies. So they talk a great game. The president talks a great game on all these big issues, but then he takes the exact opposite approach. And that's the problem with this administration. I've said from day one, this man has been a disaster for the Virginia economy, from the federal hiring freeze to health care, his plan and Speaker Ryan's plan would have cost Virginia $703 million. We don't have the money to do it. He's talking about cutting the funding for the Chesapeake Bay. Now, Chesapeake Bay is a $130 billion asset when it's in its full glory for six states and the District of Columbia. And my biggest concern is we're not going to get a budget done this year, and we are going to operate again under a continuing resolution for a state like Virginia, largest naval base in the world and all the military assets. This is a killer for defense and defense spending, and it's going to really hurt us. So my point to the president, and immigration and his travel ban. This man has been a one-man wrecking crew. We're working hard. I got my unemployment down to 3.9 with no help from this administration. And right now I'm facing very, very steep headwinds out of Washington. Get your act together and start doing things to help people.
So let's talk about Virginia and let's talk about the Medicaid expansion that you're pushing. This is not a new issue, as you know, in Virginia. There's been four or five attempts to get this through the legislature.
Yep.
What's different about it now? I mean, we know that there's a bunch of states doing this, but what has changed in the political calculation that makes you optimistic?
Well, the one thing that changed it, I'm not saying I'm optimistic. I mean, when I got elected, you know, I have a very Republican legislature, 66 Republicans out of 100. I have a speaker who said under no circumstances would this ever pass. Now, so I was realistic about my chances of getting it through the legislature. But let's be clear, that doesn't mean you don't continue to double down and try everything that you possibly can. You know, I mean, I was able to get a waiver out of Washington so that there would be no obligation to the state. They have continually over 3 years put up false arguments. One, it would cost the state financially. No, we can structure it where there's no obligations to the state. What's your argument then? Oh, it's going to be repealed, so, you know, therefore we're not going to go ahead and do it. Well, on Friday, that ended when the Speaker and the President of the United States said this is here to stay. I went back, put another amendment to the legislature to say, okay, all your arguments are now gone. There are no more excuses. We have forfeited $10.4 billion. We lose $6.6 million a day. We could help 400,000 people get health care. We could create 80,000 new jobs. Let's do the right thing. But, you know, unfortunately, a recalcitrant Republican legislature who is terrified of the Tea Party, that they will lose their $17,300 a year job, terrified they won't vote for this.
So put your political hat on for a moment in Virginia, where you've got elections this year and then the midterms next year. You and many Democrats have been frustrated. You've never been able to sell Obamacare to the American people. The public has been skeptical. It was a voting issue in the other direction, famously in 2010, and you could argue powering President Trump as well. How do you turn this around as a voting issue, and will it be a voting issue to the maintaining Obamacare and expanding Medicaid in populations like in Virginia? Do you turn it into a voting issue this year and next?
Yeah, but the only thing I would disagree with what you said, that we haven't been able to sell to the American public. A majority of Virginians greatly support Medicaid expansion. That's not the issue. They support it. What you have are 66 Republicans, as I say, who are terrified of the Tea Party and will not vote for it. I've had Republican members come into my office and say, Governor, I would vote for this tomorrow. But if I do, I won't be here next year. And because I will lose a Tea Party primary. Now, of the 31 states, a majority of the states have Republican governors. I mean, Vice President of the United States, Michael Pence did it. John Kasich did it. So let's don't make this something that's not. This is pure politics to save their jobs. It is never. Why the idea that you turn back $10.4 billion in Virginia with no obligation to the state? Who does it hurt? It hurts folks in the rural community. I've got an opiate crisis I'm trying to deal with in Virginia. I got a behavioral health crisis in Virginia, as every governor does. I'm forfeiting billions of dollars that I've already given to Washington, and I don't understand the Tea Party argument. They hate taxes. Here's a place where you get all your tax money back. They clearly don't argue in Virginia when the federal government gives us money for our aircraft carriers. This is pure politics and being terrified of the Tea Party. That is as simple as it is, and no matter what I do, it doesn't matter, because I have no say in a Tea Party primary, and the fact they probably use pictures of me in their leaflets, but it's just common sense doing the right thing, and this is what people hate about politics, this partisan divide. I will negotiate a deal with anybody, anytime, 24/7. My door is always open. They have yet to visit me to talk about this. They just won't do it. They're terrified.
Okay, so let's look at the larger political atmosphere here. Given what we've seen in the first couple of months out of President Trump, given his approval rating in Gallup poll, he's actually below 40%. Yep. Given some of the missteps, obvious missteps that have been made on both sides of Pennsylvania Avenue,
yep.
What does the outlook look for Democrats for the midterms?
Do you take back the House? Can you get the Senate?
Oh, my goodness. I have never seen such energy. The activism that's going on around the country. Right here in Virginia, we have three of our statewides, governor, lieutenant governor, attorney general. All of our House of Delegates, where 66 Republican members are, we have now candidates in all of these races, which we've never had before. I mean, 2 years ago when we had our races, out of 140 legislative seats, I had 87 that didn't even have an opponent. Now, a lot of that goes to gerrymandered districts. This time, people are coming out. The activists are coming out. They're signing up. I have primaries now, which is great, in districts to run against Republicans. 17 Republicans hold seats that Hillary Clinton actually carried in the last presidential election. So you're going to see, I've never seen such energy of people coming out to say, I'm going to run. And I'll tell you, it were the activists, I think, more than anybody, forget the elected officials, who literally turned the course on this health care debate. These town halls that are going on across the country, spectacular.
So, and do they win the House, though? Do Democrats take back the House?
Yeah, and I've talked to Nancy Pelosi extensively on this. We need 24 seats to do it. We got to put up good candidates. The one problem we always have, and this is a project that I'm working with Nancy and Eric Holder on, I am for nonpartisan, independent redrawing of lines. Look at Virginia. President Obama carried the state twice. Hillary Clinton carried it. All five statewides are Democrats. And yet, you look at the congressional map until we sued last year and won, it was 8 Republicans, 3 Democrats. So if we ever could get fairly drawn lines, there'd be no question about it. This is a Democratic state. They like what's going on here. I mean, I have high approvals. Why? We're creating jobs, more capital investment than any time in our history. When I became governor, unemployment was 5.4%. Today it's down to 3.9. Unemployment claims, lowest in 44 years since 1973. We deliver. We protect individual rights. I have more vetoes than any governor in Virginia history. I have vetoed their insane Looney Tunes bills that would discriminate against women, LGBT members. If it puts more guns on the street, I stop it. If you hurt our environment, I veto it. So, and people are happy with that. So they know when you get Democrats in office, you're going to get economic growth and you're going to get individual civil liberty protections.
So Governor, you're leaving with a high approval rating, successful governor in Virginia. What's
Purple
the chance?
Key swing battleground.
It's all coming together. So what's the chance Terry McAuliffe runs for president in 2020?
I'm going to finish here very strong. As I say, we own every economic development record now, and I'm going to continue to build on that. I just put the largest investment, $1 billion, into education last year. We've transformed transportation here. I couldn't get Medicaid done because of the Tea Party and the timidness of the Republicans, but I went out and did my own thing called the Governor's Access Plan to sign up to take care of people. I want to finish this strong. And we'll see what happens next.
2020.
And how about Hillary Clinton? She's back.
Wait, before you go to Hillary, that sounded like a definite maybe.
A definite maybe. All right, we can go with that.
So you are thinking about running for president.
Well, first of all, listen, anyone who has known me for years, I have never taken anything off the table. As I say, I want to be Tom Brady's backup quarterback. I'd like to be the Pope, too, in my future. I mean, you know, I got a lot of things I'd like to get done. And, you know, I just, you know, my personality, go big or go home. I'm not thinking about it, but I never take anything off the table.
And Hillary Clinton?
I'd like to do podcasts with you guys,
you've got a standing invitation. You're the best. Hillary Clinton, she's back with the speeches this week. What do you think? Any chance she runs again?
No. Hillary's done with elective politics. She has said that. I think it's great that she's out there. Obviously very smart. And let's be honest, she has always fought on these issues. She's never been quiet about the issues, nor should she be. So I support her. Her voice is an important voice to add to all of the exciting voices that are going on across this country, from the grassroots to the activists to the elected officials. I mean, there is a choir going on out there, and we need all those voices out there, and I think it's great. But, you know, don't read too much into it. She's going out and speaking on things she's always spoken on.
All right, Virginia Governor Terry McAuliffe, thanks for joining us.
Move to Virginia, low taxes, business friendly, 297 wineries, 185 craft breweries, 8 varieties of oysters. We got mountains, we got the beach, we got it all.
You got the Trump winery, too. You got it all. All right, we'll talk to you soon.
Virginia's for lovers.
Ooh, those oysters sound good right now. I know. That's a good sales job there. Appreciate it.
So, Rick, I think you made some news.
You think? We've got someone for the list?
I mean, you asked him if he was going to think about running, and he basically answered with his campaign.
I heard a lot about why he'd be qualified for it. It's intriguing to me because you start to see
By the way, when you asked him about Hillary Clinton, you got a very direct and firm
answer.
There's
a way to be firm.
I mean, you got a no to one, and you got a – I mean –
Hey, that's what you come to the podcast for, right? Getting answers to the hard questions. It would be an intriguing resume. I mean, Terry McAuliffe, this former DNC chair, he knows a couple of people in the finance networks. The whole Clinton operation, if Hillary Clinton isn't in there, would stand at his ready. You have the resume from a purple state governor.
Got some baggage.
Yes, I think there's a history of Terry McAuliffe, and he's a big personality in every way, and I think all of that comes back to the fore in a very crowded field. Could he fill that establishment lane? But for now, defining himself as many of these potential 2020 candidates are in opposition to President Trump and putting himself out there now and talking about the Medicaid expansion and making clear to his friends over on Capitol Hill, you can't work with this president. I think that was another piece in this, is that if there are rumblings of, well, maybe we could get together on this, no chance of that and no advisability for that for the Democratic base and from where Governor McAuliffe sits.
Fascinating. Well, this could have been the first Powerhouse Politics episode on 2020.
That's right. Hey, I mean, it begins.
I mean, unbelievable. All right. Well, thank you for listening. I want to give a special shout out to the acting executive producer of this podcast today, Michelle Boncardo, and our senior executive producer, advisor, guru to the podcast, Avery Miller. So please subscribe to the Powerhouse Politics podcast through iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts. And, you know, come on. Get some of your friends to do it too. We are part of a movement here, right, Rick?
It's moving. We're out there with our emergency podcast all the time, making some news. You know, give us a rating over there on iTunes and give us a click next time.